This is the Classics Readers Club.
This is the Art of Opera podcast. Hello, Classics readers, and welcome back to the Essential Podcast for All the Arts. My name is Dara, and we are back again with another episode about classical music. Today, we'll be exploring the history of opera, and more specifically, the origins of the Italian opera. Before we dive in deep, I would like to announce that we are now available on iTunes. And please don't forget to subscribe freely to all of our other streams on Anchor, Podbean, Spotify, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Most of the data for this episode has been provided from the free encyclopedia Wikipedia, encyclopedia.com, indianapublicmedia.org, and Encyclopedia Britannica. For more information or to leave any suggestions and comments for future episodes, please visit our Instagram page. Now hop aboard and let's get started. The art form known as opera originated in Italy in the 16th and 17th centuries, though it drew upon all the tradition of medieval and Renaissance courtly entertainment. The word opera, meaning work in Italian, as everyone who has listened to the previous episode knows, was first used in the modern musical and theatrical sense in 1639 and soon spread to the other European languages. The earliest operas were modest productions compared to other Renaissance forms of sung drama, but they soon became more lavish and took on the spectacular stagings of the earlier genre known as intermedio. A very widely discussed question is which is the earliest composition that is considered an opera? In today's standards and understandings, Daphne by Jacopo Peri is the one that wins the title, although with only 5 instrumental parts, it was much more like a chamber musical work than either the preceding intermedi or the operas of Claudio Monteverdi a few years later. Significantly, Daphne was an attempt to revive the classical Greek drama, part of the wider revival of antiquity characteristic of the Renaissance. The libretto was by Ottavio Rinuncini, and for those who still don't know what libretto is, please check our first episode. We talk about quite a lot what the libretto really is. And Ottavio Rinuncini, who had written some of the Medici intermedi in which Peri had also been involved, Rinuncini appears to have recycled some of the material of his previous operas, adapting for that one. Most of the music for Daphne is unfortunately lost. At least the libretto was printed and has survived. But one of Peri's many later operas, Euridice, dating from the 1600s, is the first opera score to have survived to this present day. The city of Florence was the site of the first opera performance in 1598, but similar musical dramas were being staged in Rome and Mantua within a few years. Several stages have been observed in the history of 17th century Italian opera. Peri's works, however, did not arise out of creative vacuum in the area of sung drama. An underlying of prerequisite for the creation of opera proper was the practice of monodi. In poetry, the term monodi has become specialized to refer to a poem in which one person laments another one's death. In music, monody refers to a solo vocal style distinguished by having a single melodic line and instrumental accompaniment. Some of the main and most famous monody composers from the 16th century are Vincenzo Galilei, Giulio Caccini, Jacopo Peri himself, Francesca Caccini, the wife of Giulio Caccini, Giovanni Pietro Berti, and Claudio Monteverdi, for whom we are going to talk about a little bit later in this episode. As we mentioned earlier, monody is the solo singing setting of a dramatically conceived melody designed to express the emotional content of the text it carries, which is accompanied by a relatively simple sequence of chords. Italian composers began composing it in this style late in the 16th century, and it grew in part from the long-standing practice of madrigals, with one singer accompanied by an instrument, as well as the rising popularity of more famous and more homophonic vocal genres such as the frottola and villanella. It is important to highlight the huge influence of Francesco Petrarca's works on all of those genres. Speaking of terms, I keep repeating the term intermedio, or more widely known as intermezzo. In the Italian Renaissance, it was a theatrical performance or spectacle with music and often dance, which was performed between the acts of a play to celebrate special occasions in Italian courts, and an influence on other forms like the English court masque. Some of the best documentation of intermedi comes from the weddings in the Medici family, in particular the 1589 Medici wedding between Cristina of Lorraine and Ferdinando I di Medici, Grand Duke of Tuscany, which featured what was undoubtedly both the most spectacular set of intermedi and the best known. This was an extremely important part of the evolution of opera because after 1600s, the form emerged into opera for the most part, though separately intermezzo continued to be used in non-musical plays in certain settings and also continued to be performed between the acts of operas. It should come as no surprise that the House of the Medici played a role in the birth of opera. The first opera for which music has survived was performed in the 1600s at the wedding of Henry IV of France and Maria de' Medici at the Pitti Palace in Florence. The opera Euridice, with a libretto by Rinuncini, set to music by Peri and Giulio Caccini, and by the way, Caccini performed an opera himself as well, recounted the story of Orfeo and Euridice. The style of singing favored by Peri and Caccini was a heightened form of natural speech, dramatic recitative supported by instrumental string music. Recitative thus preceded the development of arias, though it soon became the custom to include separate songs and instrumental interludes during periods when voices were silent. Both Daphne and Euridice also included choruses, commenting on the action at the end of each act in the manner of Greek tragedy. The theme of Orfeo, the demigod of music, was understandably popular and attracted Claudio Monteverdi's attention, who wrote his first opera La Favola d'Orfeo in 1607 for the court of Mantua. And now we hop up in another city in Italy, Venice. The inauguration early in the 1637 of the first public opera house, the Teatro di San Casiano in Venice, a commercial venture for one of the city's wealthy merchant families, was another decisive factor in the development of opera. This event ultimately removed opera from the exclusive patronage of of royalty and nobility and placed it within reach of all but the poorest sectors of the Italian urban population. By the end of the century, Venice had 9 such commercial theatres, and a number of them developed to operas. Although the theatres did not all operate simultaneously, they nevertheless attracted and indeed competed for domestic and international audiences. Thus began a trend during the mid-17th century in favor of plots with more sensational subjects that included elements of intrigue, disgust and deception that demanded elaborate machinery. The commercialization of opera also led to an increase in the influence of singers. The rise to prominence of castrati, or the men who had been castrated before puberty in order to preserve the high range and purity of their boyish voices, and a concomitant emphasis on arias over recitatives. Now, after a little bit, we are going to talk about Claudio Monteverdi more in depth, but a pupil of Monteverdi, Francesco Cavalli, became the most popular opera composer of his era by furnishing the opera houses of Venice with more than 24 operas between 1639 and 1669. Cavalli infused the librettos he set to music with dramatic force and directness. The most renowned of his operas was Chiasone, or Jason, which libretto included farcical episodes. Cavalli's chief Venetian rival and successor was Pietro Antonio Cesti, whose legacy included about 12 operas, most notable Orontea from 1656. Venetian composers in the later half of the century included Antonio Sartorio and Giovanni Legrenzi, and in the early 18th century Antonio Vivaldi, who composed 49 operas for Venice and other cities. Many of Vivaldi's operas are now lost, unfortunately. Only since the late 20th century have some of these operas, especially those of Cavalli, been recovered and revived. Venetian operas were extravagant affairs in which the improbable plots, a mixture of comic and serious elements, unfolded in a simple recitative, and the arias took on a new lyrical idiom. Arias were usually cast in strophic form, stanzas sung to the same music, and flowing triple meta beats in groups of three. And some had repetitive bass patterns that prolonged the expressive high points of the plot. Venetian composers developed distinctive styles and forms for the many solo arias and duets, and paid little attention to chorus, which had played a more important role in the Florentine court productions and continued to be important to their Roman contemporaries. The resulting separation between recitative and aria and the concomitant focus on solo singers became characteristic feature of the opera for the next 200 years. Moreover, the number of arias in an opera gradually increased from 24 in the mid-17th century to more than 60 by the end of the 1670s. Thus, the Florentine view of the music of an opera as inseparable from its poetry and drama was soon revised by the tastes and wishes of the paying Venetian audiences, who relished the visual elements of sets and costumes and took greater pleasure in musical elaboration than in compelling dramatic structure, in which rivalries flourished between opera companies and among their highly paid star singers. As Venetian opera emerged as an important force on the Italian cultural landscape, its customs and productions methods spread first throughout Italy and then beyond the peninsula of the Northern Europe. A key element in the diffusion of Venetian opera to other regions was the touring companies that impresarios gathered to perform operas in various cities throughout Italy. That's how opera became an important part of musical life also in another city, the city of Naples. The city's first permanent opera house, the Teatro San Bartolomeo, was established in the mid-17th century. By the 1700s, Naples rivaled Venice as a center of Italian opera, largely due to the works and influence of Alessandro Scarlatti, who had made his reputation in Rome. Scarlatti wrote at least 32 of his 66 operas for San Bartolomeo between 1684 and 1702, before the War of the Spanish Succession, that caused him to return to Rome. Of his operas, La Caduta dei Decemviri in 1697, on a libretto by Silvio Stampiglia that contains no fewer than 62 arias, represents Scarlatti at the height of his theatrical career. He continued to write operas for Rome, Florence and Venice before returning to Naples in 1709. There, however, the style of his operas was by then beginning to be outmoded. Now, I would like to finish this episode with someone for whom I have been talking about this whole time, and that is the one and only Claudio Giovanni Antonio Monteverdi. This whole podcast, you have been listening to the symphony of his most significant opera for us, L'Orfeo. Claudio Monteverdi was undoubtedly one of the more progressive composers between the end of the 16th century and the beginning of the 17th century. Monteverdi is usually described as an Italian composer, even though in his lifetime the concept of Italy existed only as a geographical entity. Although the inhabitants of the peninsula shared much in common in terms of history, culture and language, in political terms the people experienced various layers of authority and jurisdiction. In the first instance, they were subject to the local rulers of their city-states, powerful families such as the Gonzagas and the Medicis. Above them were the imperial powers, in the 16th century primarily Spain, and also the authority of the Habsburgs of Vienna in their role of Holy Roman Emperors, guardians of the Catholic faith. There is no clear record of Monteverdi's early musical training or evidence, as is sometimes claimed, he was a member of the Cardinal Chorus, or that he had studied at Cremona University. And here I think it's vital to talk about the Gonzagas. The House of Gonzaga was a princely family that ruled Mantua in the northern Italy from 1328 to 1708. Their family includes a saint, 12 cardinals, and 14 bishops. Two Gonzaga's descendants became empresses of the Holy Roman Empire. So, here we have a family similar to power and influence such as the Medicis at Florence. The Gonzaga court had a long history of promoting dramatic entertainment. Monteverdi worked as a musician in Verona and Milan until 1890-ish as a viola player at Duke Vincenzo Gonzaga's court at Mantua. Through ability and hard work, Monteverdi rose to become Gonzaga's maestro della musica. Vincenzo Gonzaga's particular passion for musical theatre and spectacle grew from his family connections with the court of Florence. Towards the end of the 16th century, innovative Florentine musicians were developing the Intermedio. In 1607, Monteverdi's first opera, L'Orfeo, was performed in Mantua. A century before Duke Vincenzo's time, the courthouse staged Angelo Poliziano's lyrical drama La Favola di Orfeo, at last half of which was sung rather than spoken. More recently, in 1598, Monteverdi had helped the court's musical establishment produce Giovanni Battista Guarini's play Il Pastoro Fido, which inspired the Italian craze for pastoral drama. On 6th October 1600, while visiting Florence for the wedding of Maria de' Medici to King Henry IV of France, Duke Vincenzo attended a production of Peris Euridice. It is likely that his principal musicians, including Monteverdi, were also present at this performance. The Duke quickly recognized the novelty of this new form of dramatic entertainment and its potential for bringing prestige to this prepared to sponsor it. From Monodi with melodical lines, it was a logical step for Monteverdi to begin composing opera, and probably he has been inspired by Peris Euridice. In 1607, his first opera, L'Orfeo, premiered in Mantua. L'Orfeo was not the first opera, but it was the first mature opera. It was normal at the time for composers to create work on demand for special occasions, and this piece was part of ducal celebration of Carnival. Monteverdi was later to write for the first opera houses, supported by ticket sales. L'Orfeo has dramatic power and lively orchestration. It's arguable the first example of composer assigning specific instruments to part in operas. It is also one of the first large compositions for which the exact instrumentation of the premiere is still known. The plot is described in vivid musical pictures. With this opera, Monteverdi created an entirely new style of music, the drama per la musica, or musical drama. This was followed in 1608 by L'Ariana, which, despite its popularity at the time, no longer survives except in libretti and in the title character's famous lament, a polyphonic arrangement of which appeared on his sixth book of madrigals. Later on, disagreements with the Gonzaga court led him to seek work elsewhere, and finally, in 1612, he was appointed maestro di cappella at St. Mark Cathedral in Venice. Monteverdi composed at least 18 operas, but only L'Orfeo, Il Ritorno di Ulisse in Patria, L'Inconorazione di Popea, and the famous aria Lamento from his second opera L'Ariana have survived. In his lifetime, Monteverdi enjoyed considerable status among musicians and the public. In Monteverdi's day, music rarely survived beyond the circumstances of its initial performance, and it was quickly forgotten along with his creator. In this regard, Monteverdi fared better than most. His operatic works were revived in several cities in the decade following his death. According to Severo Bonini, writing in 1651, every musical household in Italy possessed a copy of the Lamento d'Ariana. After the 1650s, Monteverdi's name quickly disappears from contemporary accounts, his music generally forgotten except for the lamento, prototype of genre that will endure well into the 18th century. Interest in Monteverdi revived in the late 18th and in the early 19th centuries among music scholars in Germany and Italy, although he was still regarded as essentially a historical curiosity. Monteverdi is lauded by modern critics as the most significant composer in the late Renaissance and early Baroque Italy, one of the principal composers in the history of Western music, and as the first great composer. Monteverdi represents the late Renaissance and while simultaneously summing up much of the early Baroque, quoting, and in one respect in particular his achievement was enduring, the effective projection of human emotions in music in a way adequate for theatre as well as for the chamber music. And there it is. Of course, we only tackled the surface of the origins of the Italian opera. It was an immense pleasure for me to present to you all of this information. Thank you, Classics readers, for tuning in. Now, if you'd like to contribute to this channel and support the Classics Readers Club, you can now do so on our page on Patreon. See you next time!